It is now a matter of life and death for many of these children who are severely acutely malnourished.
G20 pledges billions for Afghanistan to avert catastrophe. It's Thursday, October 14th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Mimi Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Holocaust survivor dies in Australia. Animals in American zoos to get COVID jab. Hollywood's Captain Kirk of Star Trek fame blasts into space. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Members of the G20 group of industrialized nations have pledged billions of dollars in aid to prevent a catastrophe in Afghanistan following an emergency meeting this week. Henry Ridgewell reports for VOA.
Winter is fast approaching in Afghanistan and temperatures are falling. Aid agencies say millions of people need urgent assistance. Salam al-Janabi works for the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, in Afghanistan.
We are expecting around 3 million children to suffer from acute malnutrition, amongst them a million who will be literally fighting for their lives as they need treatment for severe acute malnutrition.
The United Nations says Afghanistan needs billions of dollars to rescue its economy and avert a catastrophe. Members of the G20 held an emergency virtual meeting Tuesday to discuss the crisis.
Questo meeting è...
Summit host, the Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi, said it is the first time that leaders have given a multilateral response to the Afghan crisis. A consensus was found for the need for Afghanistan not to be allowed to return to being a kind of refuge for international terrorists. The European Union pledged $1.2 billion for Afghanistan and its neighbours. The aid will be channeled through international organisations working on the ground. The United States has already pledged $330 million so far this year. President Joe Biden told the G20 meeting that aid money should not be given to the Taliban. Germany's leader said there can be no recognition of the militant group as long as it denies basic rights to women and girls. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said, "I have said this very clearly, as have many others. The Taliban government is not inclusive. That is why the issue of recognizing the Taliban is not on the agenda. Nevertheless, there must and should be talks, as are now increasingly taking place." The Taliban said Tuesday the international community should normalize relations. Acting Foreign Minister Amir Khan Muttaqi said all options of force and pressure were used, but to no avail. Now we have to use the options of negotiation and understanding. For ordinary Afghans, life is getting harder. There is a desperate shortage of cash. Many businesses have closed, leading to job losses. Salaries are not being paid. The price of basic goods has increased sharply, the result of years of conflict and severe drought. Again, Salam al-Janabi of UNICEF.
It is now a matter of life and death for many of these children who are severely acutely malnourished. So what we hope for within the humanitarian community, within UNICEF, is that the humanitarian aid provided to families, children and mothers is depoliticized. That we first look at the humanitarian imperative, the urgent needs of these children, firstly, and then try and figure out the larger systems and how they will work.
Taliban and Western government officials are holding talks in Qatar on allowing aid into the country and letting refugees out. Meanwhile, G20 leaders are due to meet again face-to-face in Rome at the end of the month. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Storm leaves 11 dead in landslides, floods in Philippines. U.S. affirms need for counterterrorism, humanitarian assistance in Afghanistan. Real estate debt crisis and energy shortage threaten China's economic growth. Covering Myanmar is becoming impossible, say local journalists. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Tributes are being made for Eddie Jaku, one of the last remaining survivors of Auschwitz, who died in Australia at the age of 101. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
Eddie Jaku described himself as the happiest man on earth. In fact, that was the title of his best-selling autobiography, which was released when he was 100 years old. Friends and family remember a man who they say lived a remarkable life. He was born Abraham Jakubowicz in Leipzig, Germany, to a Jewish family. He was 18 years old when he was sent to the first of four concentration camps, which included Auschwitz, where the Nazis murdered his parents in the gas chambers. Jaku was spared because of his engineering skills. He wrote that the camp was a living nightmare. In 1945, Soviet forces moved closer to Auschwitz as the war neared its end. The camp was evacuated and prisoners were forced on notorious death marches. Jaku eventually escaped and hid in a cave, eating slugs and snails to survive. He was seriously ill when he was later rescued by American soldiers, but he recovered and moved to Australia in 1950. After the Second World War, about 27,000 survivors of the Holocaust migrated to Australia. Jaku became a volunteer at the Sydney Jewish Museum, sharing his story with visitors. Aviva Wolf, the museum's operations manager, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that Jaku was an inspiration.
He came out with such positivity. He always had time for everyone. He always had a smile on his face. You know, at 101, he drove himself to the museum, and I literally daily get postcards, letters, emails, people just wanting to tell Eddie how he's touched their lives, changed their lives.
In 2013, Jaku was awarded the Medal of the Order of Australia, a prestigious civic award for his service to the Jewish community. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said Jaku was an inspiration and a joy. The New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies said he'd been a beacon of light and hope. Jaku died at a nursing home in Sydney. He survived by his wife of 75 years, Floor, their two sons, four grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. Despite the trauma and brutality he'd witnessed, he retained a positive outlook and spread messages of peace and forgiveness. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Making headlines in Asia, Hong Kong battened down for the second time in less than a week Wednesday as Typhoon Kompasu brought heavy rains to the region. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, more than 70 zoos in the United States are gearing up to inoculate some of their animals against COVID-19 amid a rise in cases. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports on the vaccine's effectiveness for the animals and which species will get the jab first.
Nine big cats at the Smithsonian's National Zoo tested presumptive positive for the virus that causes COVID-19 in September. Fortunately, they are now eating and behaving normally after receiving treatment for secondary bacterial infections, says the curator of large carnivores, Craig Safo.
There's not a treatment for COVID itself, so our veterinarians started treating with antibiotics. There were pain meds given and anti-nausea an appetite stimulant.
How the felines got infected is still unknown.
The most likely scenario is that an asymptomatic staff member would have passed this along. It's an airborne virus, and so things do get out around your masks.
Other species, such as primates, are testing positive for COVID-19 in zoos across the U.S. The Washington, D.C. and Baltimore zoos are among those gearing up to use an available experimental COVID vaccine to boost the immunity of their at-risk animals.
Cheetah are one of the endangered species that will get vaccinated against COVID-19 before the end of the year at the Maryland Zoo.
It should be a smooth process, since many of the animals at this facility are already trained by technicians to receive injections on a routine basis. Ellen Bronson is the Senior Director of Animal Health Conservation and Research at the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore.
Something like a stick at first to just push a little bit on the animal for some pressure, and then they move to something like a needle with a cap on it, and then they'll move up to an actual injection. So there are multiple steps to get them to the point that they're voluntarily training for that procedure.
The pharmaceutical company Zoetis is donating over 11,000 doses of its COVID-19 vaccine to zoos nationwide. The company says the vaccine has proven to be safe in dogs, cats, and minks. But since it hasn't been tested in zoo animals, it's hard to say yet if they'll be protected, particularly against the Delta variant, and for how long. Mahesh Kumar is Senior Vice President of Global Biologics at Zoetis.
Giving them two doses, you at least reduce the risk of exposure. The groups that receive the experimental vaccine have an obligation to report back to us and the USDA the disposition of those vaccines and what happened to those animals.
On October 7th, a snow leopard that had shown COVID-19 symptoms died at the Great Plains Zoo in South Dakota. A necropsy will determine the cause of death. Given the large number of visitors at zoos nationwide, questions have been raised over whether COVID-19 infections among the animals could pose a public health risk. Louis Shang is a professor of chemical virology at Cornell University.
Probably not, because the population is small, so the infection will self-extinguish, meaning the animals will recover or they will die. At the end of the clinical trial, if there are infections in unvaccinated zoos and not in vaccinated zoos, we will have some evidence of the potency of the vaccine.
Staffers at the Maryland Zoo are hopeful the vaccine will indeed provide an extra layer of protection against COVID-19, especially for several species which are already listed as endangered.
Losing an animal in a zoo, there's always an impact. They're valuable to the breeding programs. They're valuable to the troop that they're in, the group that they're in. So obviously it would have a big impact on us.
Veronica Valeras Iglesias for VOA News at the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore.
Hollywood's Captain Kirk, 90-year-old William Shatner, blasted into space on Wednesday, reaching the final frontier aboard a rocket ship built by Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin company. Bezos is a Star Trek fan. The Amazon founder had a cameo as an alien in one of the later Star Trek movies, and Shatner rode free as his invited guest. Shatner and three fellow passengers, including former NASA engineer Australian Chris Boysen, soared to an estimated 106 kilometers above Earth in the fully automated capsule and then safely parachuted to the desert floor. In a flight that lasted about 10 minutes, William Shatner has become the oldest person to go into space. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta has more.
Command engine start. 2, 1.
William Shatner and three fellow passengers blasted off from West Texas to more than 66 miles into space as part of the Blue Origin flight. Shatner's claim to fame is playing Captain Kirk on Star Trek. Upon returning, Shatner was overcome as he thanked Blue Origin founder Jeff Bezos.
What you have given me is the most profound experience I can imagine. I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened.
Audio courtesy of Blue Origin. I'm Margie Zaraletta.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Chris Cascao, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.